All right, I'm going to go ahead and get started. It's about that time. So, as it says up there, I'm Michael Shore. I'm a technical lead with CDW. So a little gist of that is I do a little bit of team lead, team mentoring, planning at CDW, but then also deliver projects around Configuration Manager as a consultant. And just to go a little bit, quick brief overview of the session, I just don't want anybody to sit through 30 minutes of the session to realize it wasn't exactly what you had in mind. And I also don't want people running out the door, but just a brief overview. I'm going to be targeting the installation of Configuration Manager via command line. We're going to be creating an INI file that drives that installation, and then going back at the end and leveraging that INI file to do a site restore. So again, good for disaster recovery situations, lab building, things like that. So a little deeper dive into the agenda for this morning. First, we'll talk a little bit about why we're putting time into scripting the installation as opposed to just using the standard GUI, and some of the benefits of the approach and potential payoffs down the road. And if you decide to go this route, you're likely going to get some questions when you get back home as to why are we doing this instead of just going about it the way we usually do. So some material there that you'll want to pay attention to. After that, we'll talk a little bit about the frequently neglected topic of planning. I don't want to dwell on it too terribly long, as it's not the full intent of the presentation, but there's some key points in there that I think are really useful to the discussion and demonstrations later on. So we'll spend a little bit of time addressing those as well. Next, we'll create the INI for scripting the installation. That's obviously a core area of the presentation, so we'll spend a fair amount of time on that. We'll demonstrate the installation of a primary site reporting to a central admin site via the command line. And then for fun, we'll use a remote named SQL instance as opposed to a local default instance. And the last thing we're going to do with that is we're going to take that same INI file, as I mentioned, we're going to make some edits to it, go through the restore process, and see what that looks like. So the overall goal being twofold: document and control of the installation process, and then create a usable process that can be leveraged later on for a site restore. The installation process, especially at the end, should leave us some time for questions. I've tried to make sure that the timing in there is just right so that we can go through some Q&A towards the end while the restore is running. So why script the setup, Mike? I get this question a lot with customers I'm working with. They're ready to just jump into that standard GUI interface and go through what they're used to in previous products that they've installed. They want a GUI. They're used to that GUI. The programmers and the PowerShell gurus in the room tend to enjoy it because they get to watch the GUI people get a little bit uncomfortable with the situation. So it's fun to step away from those standard installation processes that we're used to, get into a completely different installation process and get the same good results and be able to reuse it later on down the road. Chances are you're here if you have plans to install a Config Manager site at some point. What better time to find a different or better way of doing it than before you've gone through that process? I'm also going to include about midway through the presentation, I'm going to take a look at, for those of you that maybe have already set up Config Manager and wondering, all right, how can I leverage this data now that I've already done it? There's a good chance that there's a nugget sitting on your server already that you can reference back to for some of the restore portions of it as well. Documentation. It's not too common that I go into an organization and find truly usable documentation on how the installation was handled. In some cases, it's screenshots going step by step through the GUI, and that's great. It's better than nothing. But as a consultant, there's plenty of times where you go in, you're trying to help fix, repair, restore a site, and there's nothing available. The first thing you're going to ask for is there any documentation? This is going to help document that process a little bit for you, so you actually have kind of a little bit of a repair guide of sorts for your hierarchy, for someone that's coming in from the outside to assist you, or internally as well. Could be as simple as you're on vacation and there's an issue with the site. You can point some people to these files to leverage as to what was done when you set the site up. We don't like to think we're going to make mistakes.
have any failures with our sites or need to restore it down the road. But the reality is that these products aren't perfect from start to finish, just like we're going to make mistakes when we're working with it and potentially cause challenges for ourselves. So if we can do things up front to have plans in place to do a restore down the road, it's definitely useful to have that in place. Consistency. Many environments are simple enough where one site's enough to manage all your workstations and servers. And the reality is with 2012, for even a lot of mid and large size organizations, one site is plenty to support your infrastructure. But for those of you with multiple sites or that have a need for multiple sites, wouldn't it be great if you could have a consistent process for installing all those sites across the board where you're just changing the server name and the site codes? I know in the previous versions, it would have been great for a lot of environments I went through where multiple primary sites were built, and you could tell which engineer built which primary site based on how it was done. So documented and consistent process allows you to draw this process a little bit in the future as you plan a new infrastructure or just make some changes to your current infrastructure. And along the same lines with consistency, you're going to be running the prerequisite checks via command line. Why not stay in there while you're at it and kick off the installation? Lab planning. Ideally, everybody has a test lab, right? Something in with you, you can do all your dev work. Once you know it's flushed out, you can port it over into production. How many people truly have a test lab that you're able to work on things like this back home? So there's a handful of hands, but not as many as you'd like to see. So for those of you with that, maybe go back, give your manager a big hug, or just bring them some swag from the expo. But how often is it really built to mimic your production environment from start to finish? Reality is it's really hard to truly mimic a lot of what we're doing in production and test. But anything you can do to get that close to that consistency is going to help you down the road. If you're running Config Manager RTM right now, you're looking to upgrade to Service Pack 1, isn't it great that you could potentially go into a test environment, test out what that Service Pack install is going to look like, get an idea of what the impact is, especially with something like Service Pack 1, which is not your everyday Service Pack that we've been used to. It's not simply a hot fix rollup. There's a lot of feature changes here. It's more like an R release to your environment. You want to go through the planning and testing to make sure you know what that looks like. Cumulative update 1 that was just released, same thing. And with the scripts created, what you're going to see is a simple change to the server name, the FQDN, the site code, and you can easily replicate what you've done in prod in a dev environment. You could potentially port this onto a laptop, which is what I'm carrying around now. Domain controller, primary site, some clients, and you're up and running. You could, slower hardware, you're going to see some degradation, but the base idea being that you can still walk through these simple tests like a service pack and get an idea of what the impact's going to be. Well, let's be honest, we've all been on a call with product support at some point. They're giving you a recommendation, you trust the recommendation, you want to move forward with it and fix the issue, but at the same time, it's not as much their job on the line as it is yours. It'd be nice to test that out in your dev environment. Even if it's as simple as running through it on your laptop, running Config Manager on there in a virtual machine, just to see what the impact is. Because it's cool. There's a chance to show the other teams that you work with that you can do some fun stuff in the command line with your products too. Part of coming to a conference like this is finding new ways to amaze and fascinate your colleagues and peers at work. I tried showing how cool this was to my wife and daughter at home, but there wasn't too much fanfare with that. So I've resorted to coming out here and making you guys watch it with me. Go home, amaze and fascinate your colleagues at work with some of the stuff. And while I'm joking a bit, there's a little bit of truth to this too. A lot of us have to beg, borrow, and plead to get to come to training and conferences like this. Take the knowledge that you're picking up this week, the little tips and tricks, and don't be afraid to show them off at work, because that's going to make the whole negotiation process a year from now for other conferences, it's going to be a lot easier that way. So planning. Such an unpopular topic for some reason, but just out of curiosity, how many people actually go through true planning design sessions when you're implementing something like Config Manager? Okay, that's good to see. It's what I tend to find is it's something that gets neglected quite a bit, and it's unfortunate. And same thing with something like Service Pack 1 that I was just mentioning. It's more than just a service pack upgrade that you want, okay, let's get this in place so that we're on the latest service pack upgrade. There's feature changes that we're seeing there that we need to make sure we're aware of, not just because of potential impact, but there might be some other business drivers connected to those features that can help us out and make our hierarchy and what we do much more impactful on our business. And really, I imagine there's a lot of people here this week that are just, a big part of their focus is picking up on what's changed in my infrastructure because of Service Pack 1, whether it's Config Manager or the other System Center suite products, and getting ideas on ways to leverage that more and more back home. Planning before you install. Plan right, install once. Measure twice, cut once. A lot of similarities there. We've all probably at some point or another rushed into installing something simply because we got the green light from our manager. Kind of like a kid with a new toy, like, ooh, shiny object, I need to play with it. You want to get in there and just get running with something. And I know it's tough to not run with that enthusiasm, but step back, measure twice, cut once. Focus on the features. All too often what I find is that customers want to rush through talking about and get into talking about how many processors am I going to need, how many cores, how much memory, how much hard drive space. They just want to grab onto their new toy, their server, and get running with it. They skip all the discussion about what features of the product they're going to use. The thing is, the features dictate all of that other stuff. Talk about what you need and what you want, what your business needs. If you build a server and you have your hierarchy in place, and then decide you might want to transition to some other the other features of some, for instance, in Config Manager, something like operating system deployment or software delivery, there's going to be some impact on your environment there. It could be as simple as adding hard drive space, but if you, depending on where you've built that environment, that's going to be a rather challenging change to what you've decided on. Focus on the features. Firm foundation. You wouldn't want a builder to rush into pouring the foundation on your house and not plan that properly, because it's not very easy to fix once they're done. Granted that what we're talking about here isn't quite as rigid of a scenario, but it's harder to request additional hardware in a lot of cases to make adjustments to your infrastructure. So again, connected into focusing on the features, making sure that we have a proper foundation in place ahead of time. And I've seen many situations where companies put Config Manager in place based on what they did with the 2007 version of the product, and then decided to add other features once they got into 2012. And again, it impacted what they need. It could be as simple as there's a change and now there's a desire to put endpoint protection in place. There's really not a major impact to how you're going to plan your infrastructure, but again, there is an impact and there's things you need to plan for around that. What are your business drivers? It's similar to focusing on the features and some of the groups that I'll discuss in the following slide, but what's driving your installation? Is it operating system deployment and antivirus? That's good, but are there any other business drivers in your environment that you need to be aware of? Don't get caught up in a rush and forget about key business drivers in your design. I'm going to chat a little bit about some of the key stakeholders you want to involve in your planning. One important group that I don't want to forget and mention, and it's tied into a lot of this right here, is the project sponsor, the project stakeholder. They won't want to be involved the whole duration of the project, but they need to understand what's going on, and you need to make sure that they're in the loop as well. If they're hearing you talking about putting Config Manager in place, and that afterwards it means you're going to have some great help desk ticketing system, and that after Ops Manager is in place, you'll be able to deploy operating systems and software updates, then you may need to sit down with those folks and have a little bit of a touch base on what System Center products provide which features, just to make sure you're all on the same page. We've all been there, and there's a ton of components and possible options within System Center, so sit down, make sure your leadership understands what they need to know and what you're going to be working on. I added this quote in here, well known for his witty quotes, Ben Franklin, by failing to prepare, you're preparing to fail. It just seemed like it made a lot of logical tie into what we're talking to about here. Little statistics as well, about 10% of the room's now searching the internet to make sure that is a legitimate quote, and it is. Design. It's about the people, too. The first step of the project is not about as much about scripting as it is about process, planning, and procedure. So that's why we're talking about this a little bit. Out of curiosity, how many people are still working with Config Manager 2007? Anybody with 2003 or older? OK, that's good to see. Or they just don't want to raise their hands. You can't properly discuss a lot of the features of Config Manager without getting the proper people involved. You're undoubtedly going to have at least one person in your environment that used to work with SMS 2.0 back in 1999, and they're going to have all sorts of feedback on why it's horrible to be putting Config Manager in place based on their 2.0 experience. There's potentially a good reason, too, that they're no longer working with products like System Center and Config Manager. So try to be educated enough to be able to push some of that feedback away as you need to. Two groups that I've listed up here that are currently neglected from this process. Any guesses as to which those are? From my experience, it's the SQL DBAs and the help desk. So no offense to those folks, it's just based on what I see, it's the groups that people try to keep out of the process, but that I think really need to be in there. So in the case of the SQL DBAs, it tends to be one of those IT operations groups that kind of marches to the beat of their own drum. The thing is, if SQL doesn't work, Config Manager doesn't work. Include them in the process so that you can let them know what you need, and they can tell you a little bit about what their requirements are. This gives you a chance to let them know that they can't custom build the SQL schema, and that they're going to have to give you some permissions that they're not going to be happy about. Help desk, along the same lines but in a different direction, they're a primary user. A lot of organizations, the help desk is the key user of Config Manager. They're the primary person that's in there. They're living and dying by Config Manager and what you provide with that type of tool set. A lot of times they get neglected because they ask too many questions or they're making your job a little bit more difficult. The reality is bring them in early. It's going to make your job easier throughout, even if it's just simply a help desk manager that can be a point of contact throughout the process. So you remove the help desk and the DBAs from the process, you're pretty much ignoring your primary user, or your primary user group, and then the primary support system of the backbone of your environment. So I definitely don't recommend keeping those people out. Admin current and past. I know I mentioned the previous SMS admins, but the person that potentially is still in your environment that helped set it up, there's going to be a lot of benefit to having that person involved just to get some of the things that went well, what didn't go well, potentially some of the resources that they may know of within the environment to help you out. The network and server team. A lot of times that's you already. You're part of that group, but depending on how large your environment is, there's a lot of segmenting there. You may need to pull in some other resources as well. And I know in a lot of cases, many of you wear you wear all of these hats. You're the SQL DBA. Even if you're not a SQL guru, it's just part of your responsibility. You're the network team. You're the server team. So hats off to you, because I know that's a lot to balance for the smaller organizations that run Config Manager, that one person that has that and 10 other responsibilities, that's a ton to absorb. So we've talked a little bit about who's still using what in terms of Config Manager. And regardless of what version you're on, it's still wise to have a structured design process to plan out your environment. Bring together the team, go through a thorough, proper, and planning process. And I suggest you take this time, even if you're migrating or upgrading from a previous version, especially when you're migrating. All too often what I see is that what's broken in the previous version gets migrated over to the next version. There's a lot of great migration tools in Config Manager 2012, but make sure you're not bringing over your mistakes. Creating the INI. This is where we get into the meat of things, so let's dig in and get going with this. Limitations of the INI file during the installation. There really aren't a lot of limitations here. We'll go through the available fields, and what you'll see in there is that if you've gone through the GUI-based installation, in essence, what we're doing is we're creating an INI file that has all of those settings that you would fill in the GUI, and we're feeding it to the setup routine and just creating a process that we can leverage later on. Seems easy enough, right? So first look at some of the fields within the INI. The first section is going to be identification. And this changes a little bit when we get into the restore process. What you'll see here is the two available actions that we have, install primary site and install CAS for central admin site. You have to pick one or the other here. If you were to try to feed both of these feeds to the fields to the setup routine, it's going to spit out an error. So picking one or the other as far as which server you're going to build. I really tried to make it so that we could go through a CAS and then a primary connected to the CAS. It's just the amount of time it takes to install the central admin site, about 20, 30 minutes, and then the primary just wouldn't happen in the confines of things, but completely feasible. Building the automation, or building the installation, this is the options field we get into. This is where we're really doing a lot of our configuration. The first part here, product ID, I just put in this generic just to give you an idea of how you should be entering your product code. What we'll use in the demos, and you could easily use in a lab environment, at least for a temporary basis, is just EVAL will allow you to run it as a 180-day eval installation. Site code, any legitimate config manager site code will do, so whatever you choose to put in there for your site code, company ID, whatever. Site name, again, however you choose to name your sites is completely up to you. The next portion gets into the prerequisites that if you've ever gone through, in 2007 had this as well, where you've a set of components you have to you have to download as part of the installation process, or you can pre-download. What I've done here is set prerequisite comp equal to 1, which is telling the setup that I've already downloaded the files, and they're in that prerequisite path. Personally, I like to download them in advance. Prior to Service Pack 1, I found this was one of the longest parts of the setup routine to go through, was just the download, and then the hash check it does against that download. It slows the process down incredibly. And in addition, in some instances, because of security imposed on your servers, you may not be able to download this. So again, you start to go through the installation, you're ready to go, and you just hit this brick wall because of that. So the benefit here is if you go through, download this on your desktop or your workstation, copy it up to a server, you have it available for you to use, just point to it from the server. Now, we're not set up with internet access here, and I didn't really think it was truly necessary to demonstrate that download process, but easily done just to download those prerequisite files, have them sitting there ready to go. For those of you building out multiple sites, this is kind of a no-brainer too. Why download it 4 or 5 times if you're building out multiple sites? Or if you're building test and dev, it's going to be the same set of files. Just download them once and have them in a common location that you can reuse them. What I frequently do is just go through the download every so often just to see if there's been any changes to it. And then I'll take that and using a tool on my laptop, I'll just put those into an ISO. That way, for my virtual machines, I can just point it to an ISO, copy the download files up onto the virtual machine. Though if I ever need them for anything else, I have all those files in a single file that I can port around and move where I need to move it. Now, this last line here, role communication protocol. This is going to be where you're getting into if you're using HTTP or HTTPS, and then it ties in directly to the next field here, clients use PKI certificate. This is if you're getting into internet-based client management, which I'm not seeing many organizations do, but for those of you that do, again, this is something that should be flushed out in your design process. If you know that you have a need or there's a chance you might have a need around supporting internet-based clients, you're going to want to make sure you flush that out early and plan for it as well, because it has significant impacts on your hierarchy. And with a lot of these fields, you can certainly make changes. Well, the previous fields like site code, you can't really change that, but something like adding in PKI support or HTTPS supported servers, you can add that on later as you need to. Again, and similar with these other fields here, mobile device language. Sorry. I'm not running into a lot of situations where I need to support multiple languages. Sorry, that's the next field. The mobile device language, just be adding mobile device language support here. Admin console equal one is just whether you're installing the admin console or not. Zero just doesn't install the admin console on the server. Not sure why you wouldn't want that there, though there may be a security reason or just a personal preference. Join CEIP, the Customer Improvement Program. I personally tend to set this to yes, and I know a lot of people tend to lean away from that. A lot of times it's, well, it's some sort of sinister Big Brother button that gives magical access to your server. Really, from everyone that I've talked to within Microsoft, it's more of handing off information around what features are enabled and how some of those features are enabled with your environment so they can do product planning. So, and then, let's see, the last two sets of fields here. I put those in another color just to point them out. They're not required fields, management point and distribution point. Just like when you go through the GUI, you do not need to set up a management point or a distribution point. You can uncheck those. You can choose to not have a management point or distribution point set up on the primary site server and certainly on a central admin site. So that, again, is up to you. During the install, if you want to take care of that, it's an option available to you, and you can just enter in the FQDN and the protocol that you'll be using on the management point and or distribution point. In this case, the question was just as far as, make sure I have it right, is this all running on one server? In the demonstration, yes. I mean, potentially, yeah, depending on how your environment is, you may port this out to multiple servers. I decided to not make demonstration life too challenging on myself and have multiple servers. Plus, at some point, the laptop might burst into flames. But yeah, absolutely feasible to have multiple servers involved. As far as the SQL goes, in this demonstration here, what we're looking at is this is pointing to the exact same server as the primary site's being installed on and just calling out the database name. In the demonstration I'm going to do, I'll have it pointing to a remote SQL server. So you can just see that it's completely feasible to go that as long as you've covered all your prerequisites and you're set there, everything's going to work. And database name, if you're using a named instance, you'll see in the demonstration too. This is where you would call out a named instance of a SQL server and the database name. So as far as database naming, I tend to just keep with something consistent that calls out potentially product name like SCCM or CM and then site code. If you have a single server with just that config manager SQL database on it, it probably doesn't really make much of a difference. But if you're dealing with a server with multiple databases, I just like to have that consistency there so I can figure out which database it is. Or if I'm stepped away from the situation and somebody else is looking in there more so, that they can figure out what they're looking at. Some of the other available fields that I left off that example and some that will show up later on are listed here. The add server and add client languages. That's what I was starting to reference before as far as it's something that I don't generally run into where I'm supporting multiple languages, though I know based on the demographics of MMS that there's plenty of you here that are supporting multiple languages. You're possibly here from another country as it is and having to add that support in. It could be as simple as these are things that you can certainly change later on as is shown with the delete server and client languages. But it could be as simple as you're going through an acquisition of another company and need to add in language support for those other countries. This is available to you, and there's a whole list within the TechNet documentation that lists out all of the language codes that you would need to add in for those various languages. SQL SSB port, by default, that's set to 4022. Generally, not something you have to change, but if you're using a named SQL instance, you will need to enter in a different SQL SSB port there. And then hierarchy expansion, that's only if you have a primary that's going to be connecting into a central admin site. And in the demonstration, you'll see how that gets called out. Okay, OneNote, this is something where I'm not going to be doing any magical porting of data from OneNote into the installation routine. It's just something I wanted to call out just because it's a useful tool for me from a design perspective. And then I think for a lot of you, you may be carrying this around on your laptop on a day-to-day basis and not leveraging it. I see it a lot of organizations where they own OneNote, they're just not using it. Or maybe it's something like Evernote along the same lines. Don't want to turn it into some sort of sales pitch on it, but again, a lot of times you already own it, so why not leverage it? Personally, when I'm going into a design session, I'm documenting everything in OneNote as it is and then filling in a lot of these fields. I can then take that data and simply port it over into the actual INI that I'm installing from, get the installation routine going from there. You can put a ton of other notes in here, as well as I document just about everything I do, whether it's customer projects I'm working on, other meetings I'm in, exercise logs. You can stuff it all in OneNote. So worth something worth taking a look at, but then also extremely fitting and useful for this scenario. And we'll hop back over into demonstration for the actual INI file. For that, we'll bring up the site that's eventually going to become our primary site. We'll take a little bit a look at. See that okay? This is just a little look into what the INI file looks like now that we've got all of those fields filled in. For the product code, I'm going to put in eval just so we don't have an actual site or license code in there. As long as it's an appropriate site code and clean, any site code anybody wants to toss out, just so it doesn't look like I'm pulling off some cooking show switch up here. There we go, EAT. And then for the site name, anything? Paul's site. And we'll come down here, make sure we've got our, this is what I was mentioning as far as the database name. I'm calling out a named instance on the SQL server, entering in the site name. So what we'll do is EAT SCCM. And then I've modified the SQL SSB port from 4022 just to 4024, just so that we're able to port that, just so that communication happens. You'll find if you go through a test and try not changing that, it's going to give you some issues. And then as far as the hierarchy expansion option that I had mentioned, that shows up down here. And we're just calling out the CCAR site, just as, in this case, that's just the FQDN of the site server that we're going to be installing to. And let's see, I think everything there looks set and ready for install, so we'll save that. Like many other things, we'll open up an admin command prompt and hop over to our ISO that's mounted. And the command line on this is rather simple. Just let it know that we're using a script. I'm going to hop over to another machine in a little while, and what I'll show is just much like any other executable, just a slash question mark, will bring up a list of some of the available options. So just point it to our INI file. And before I kick the installation off, one of the things that I personally like to do is open up CMTrace. For those of you that are coming from previous versions, CMTrace is just kind of the new modern updated version of SMS Trace or Trace 32 that you may have been used to, and now it magically will find whatever log file it knows you're looking for. Not really, but it's essentially the same set of tools, but you'll see it's just as useful and beneficial. Personally, regardless of how I'm running the installation, I like to set up the install log so I can monitor that. So kick that installation off. And we'll make sure that gets up and running successfully. Just going through, what you'll notice is it goes through a bit of a prerequisite check at the beginning. Prior to SP1, you would have had to do that prerequisite check outside of the command line based installation. Now it kicks it off for you. And what you'll see here are just some standard errors. I'm hoping those are the standard errors. Of course not. All right. What better? Of course, when you do a demo, you're going to have some sort of issue, right? Sorry about that. That's a bit of a time waster. I'm fairly certain the server had permissions earlier. That's what it looks like when it errors out. It does provide some useful feedback. Let me make sure I'm on the right machine here now. And let's make sure we're still seeing the server. Let's do this. Now that looks active. And if it's not permissions there, then it's potentially permissions in SQL. Let me do this. Let me make sure I didn't make a mistake in that INI file. Everything looks legitimate in the INI file. It's a possibility. No, the server name's accurate. Again, sorry about this delay. I do have another server over here. We'll just hop over to that one and give that one a shot. Now, what you'll see on this other server that's up and running that will potentially, unfortunately, lose in the demonstration process is that I had this one prepped just to show that when you go through the GUI, you can actually create this INI file through that as well, too. But what I'd like to really do is truly start the installation from here. So let's hop into, all right, make some edits to this. Just leave that for the sake of time. All right, let's hop over to our log file. Make sure we get our setup install running along okay. Hmm.
Okay, that looks like it's chugging along okay there. I hope that doesn't impact our ability to get to the restore. Sorry about that delay. I'll have to yell at that server later for not playing along. What we can do is we'll use this server to demonstrate the other portion since we can still get to where we need to go. I'll just keep an eye. And that's a standard set of errors. One thing you'll learn is you get a little bit of heartache the first time you go through the install and you actually watch the setup log. There's a lot of stuff that shows up as errors. Sometimes it's a standard error just in the kind of the backwards process that the install routine does its checking to see if things are there. Some of it's because it has the word failed in it and it's an okay failed. Like it looked to see if a file was there, it failed, and then it put the file there. That's an expected operation, but it gives you a lot of this red that goes by. So if you're ever sitting there with other administrators and like, oh, look, he tried this whole new install way and it's not working, go through it ahead of time. You'll get used to some of the errors, be ready to talk about them. So while this install is running along successfully, I will hop over to the server that was giving us issues and just show you what I was talking about as far as the ability to create this file or potentially find this file. If you've not had it, if you've not gone through this process yet, you have the, you've installed Config Manager, didn't go through this, but you'd like to see if you could leverage the INI file process for a restore. So we'll hop over, just want to make sure the file isn't actually in place yet. So right now, you'll see we just have a couple HTML text files sitting in this temp directory. And now, unfortunately, this is going to take a few minutes. So what we'll do is we'll kick this off and then hop over to discuss some of the restore process. And our installation is still chugging along swimmingly, so that's good. I'll move to the, while that decides to wake up, hop over to the presentation just to show some of the, one of the errors that I ran into pretty frequently while going through this process. Let's look at the install. Here we go. When you go to initiate this installation process, it's fairly simple to make a syntax error like anything else. One of the common ones is I would accidentally point it to the wrong path for the installation prerequisites. And what you'll find is you fix that syntax error and you go back to rerun the installation. Now what happens is this will frequently happen. It comes up with this error just stating that it failed to copy an XML6 MSI file. And more so, setup cannot install the required MSXML6 parser, which my initial thought when I saw that was, well, I must have missed the prerequisites around XML6, and that's where I've made my mistake. In fact, I hadn't made any mistakes there. It was just that the previous install had put these files there in that path that you see. Essentially, in the admin share, it creates this config manager temp folder, drops the files there. As simple as deleting the files, getting them out of there, allowed the setup to then continue. Of course, once I corrected the syntax errors in the INI file. So if you run into that where you're trying to initiate the installation, hit some errors, see this error, go and check that path that it feeds you. You're likely going to see that it just kind of creates this file and isn't able to delete it on its own or overwrite it, so it gets angry at you. Now on this other server, just to show you where I am there, switch back over to the demo. I'm just going through this, again, this painful process, which is why I kind of pre-prepped this server as far as verifying the downloaded prerequisites. That'll take a few minutes for that to complete. This installation's still running along fine, no issues. see, anything else as far as prerequisites?
You know, again, too, some of this what you may find as you're going through this process with your own team internally is you may get a little bit of pushback. Well, it takes a little bit longer. I've got to create this INI file. Why do I have to go through this process? And again, you could pre-create it on your own time once you've got the information, which is, what, as a consultant, what I'm often doing. You could go through what I'm eventually going to get to into this demo here as far as pre-creating one through the setup GUI, though to me there's no real benefit to that. It's more so if you've already installed and you're trying to find it. But what I kind of look at is it's kind of like a car safety feature or child seats for kids. You really don't want to leverage the investment you've made there, but if you need to, you'll be glad that you've spent the time and the energy on doing something. The idea here is we're documenting our installation and how we did it, and we're going to be able to use this later on for a site restore. And it could be as simple, too, as a common situation I run into as a consultant is I go in, I'm asked to install and set up Config Manager, but I'm not often given hands-on permissions to that server. And for me, that's a bit of a challenge. I want to be the, if I'm going to be helping with this process, I want to have a little bit more hands-on to that. And there's a lot of situations where I just can't have credentials to do so. Or maybe you as the administrator can't have credentials to do so because of the SQL permissions required or because of just server administration or because that's just how it is with politics sometimes. You can go through, create this INI file, hand off the command line they need to run, put it in a batch file, VB script, PowerShell script, however you want to feed that data along. Say, here, run this. This will take care of the installation. And then you're getting what you need, and you're working along with your own environment's requirements. I just want to take a look back at this other server, see how we're doing. Yeah, 8 of 15. Again, yeah, if you add the download into this process, forget about it. It's quite a lengthy and painful process. What we'll do next is we'll switch into talking a little bit about the restore. Has anyone ever actually tested out the site restore process in their environment? A handful, so I'm guessing the rest of you probably have not tested that out. Something worth taking some time to do. Build, even if it's on a laptop, build up a site, install Config Manager, back it up, put the backup somewhere else, snap back that server, and then run the restore, which is in essence, assuming time allows it, that's what we're going to get to here, is running a restore of that environment. Oh, of course it has. Right, well, I'm going to move into the restore portion anyway, and we will go from there. Let's see, scripts could be pre-created and tested, absolutely. I definitely recommend taking the time to pre-create those scripts. You've already created the INI file. You have to make some slight modifications to it as it is. Take the time, edit that INI file ahead of time, and have it stored somewhere, ideally not on the same server that's the Config Manager server, which is what I often see with backups too. But if there's a way to move those somewhere else so that they're safe. Granted, in a virtual environment, maybe it doesn't make a big deal, but if that is the issue, that virtual system is gone, then you may have an issue. If, and it's a big if, but if your lab is isolated enough and allows common naming conventions, you could actually use this to back up your site and build an exact replica of your test lab. Now, I rarely see this, and oftentimes it's environmentally just hard to make happen. I actually have one customer that has a isolated test and dev, and everything we're going to do in prod gets done in test dev first. And the biggest challenge there is that the naming conventions are so common that they get confused which environment we're in as it is. So, but still, you can make some slight changes to these files and still port the data from one to the other. And then I've editing in advance for the restoration. So let's take a little bit about look at some of those restore fields. First one there, recover CCAR or recover primary site. Again, it's going to be whether you're recovering a primary or a central admin site. The server recovery options, those come into play and dictate some of the other fields you're going to see later on. So recover site in SQL databases is going to be obvious if you're doing a full restoration of your environment. The site recover site server only, that's going to be, again, if your site server is the only thing that failed, then you can just simply restore that. It's similar to doing a site reset to a degree. And then recover SQL database only. So if you're just looking to recover the SQL database files, the next section is then to a degree dictated by what you've chosen in the first section as to whether you need to add anything there. Setting it to 10 is restore site database from a backup. 20, using that the database backup from another method. Now I added some stars there just to make sure we call that out too. In the past, we could only use the backups that we picked up from Configuration Manager. There was no option to say, go grab the database off of VPM or pick up the database from the SQL admin's backup. You could potentially do it, but it wasn't a supported part of the restore wizard. So nice to have that option available to you now. I know that makes that discussion with the SQL DBAs a little bit easier, too, to know that they don't have to let go of control of the backup process. They can hand that off to you a little bit. Create a new database. Pretty simple there. If there's something truly corrupt with the database, this gives you the option to pre-create that database, or recreate it, sorry. And then skip database recovery, it's an option there. I'm not quite sure why you'd choose it, because if you've not picked to restore the database previously, then not a whole lot of reason why you'd be skipping it. The next portion being the reference site, just simply the FQDN of the site that you're pulling that you're restoring. So in this case, it would be primary site or MMS primary. The site server backup location is going to be the backup location of the site server itself. So let's say you're just doing the site restore from the previous field. So if we go back and we choose only two as opposed to one where it's both, then we only need to mention the site server backup location. If we're doing a backup with SQL only or with site and SQL, so the one or the four, we need to mention the backup location. That's the actual path to the backup, or to the database backup files. If you're using the standard config manager backup maintenance task and you're putting it all into one folder, it's essentially the same folder path that you're pointing it to. Editing the INI for site restore. So we'll hop over to our unfortunately failed install process. And let's go to this server. Yeah, this one. That one failed. This one, we will dig into that one a little bit more as far as, well, actually, this server still has the restore INI. So we can take a little bit of a look at that. Unfortunately, we're not going to have the ability to run the restore since the install didn't want to finish for us. So I'll hop in this prior restore INI. What I like to do is I can have this data pre-created. So we look at the, starting off at the top, action is going to be recover the primary site. And server recover option I chose here was one, which would be to recover SQL and the site itself. The database recovery option equal to 10, so it's telling it to grab the database restore, and then the site server backup location and backup location. I just have those asterisks in there, just it was more so as a reminder of me to change that field when I came in to specify the folder that got created in the backup routine. All you really need to do from there on out is grab the rest of what you've done in your previous file and copy, save. Now you have your restore files available for you to run the site restore. And while we're in here, I will also demonstrate. Sorry, I switched to the wrong server. So let's close that out. And this is what I was mentioning before as far as potentially finding this INI file from previous installations that you've done. If we come in here and just give the site
site name, install the console. I'm just going to keep it as a standalone primary site. SQL server, we will change to the going through the standard GUI that you may have gone through at your system, at your environment already. We'll leave the DP and MP involved and get to your standard summary screen. Once you click next, it starts to go through some prerequisite checking. But if we come over here, go to that temp folder again, notice we have config manager autosave.ini. Open that up, and it's gone through and ported over all of the data that we entered into the GUI into this INI file. So again, I wouldn't go through using this to create the INI, but for those of you that already have this in place, you can potentially go back, and the challenge may be that it's going to be under the profile that it was installed under, and you may be able to find that INI file sitting there available for your use. Come back. Unfortunately, the site restore portion of the demo is going to be a fail on me, and I truly apologize for that. As we'll go with demos, everything works the 100 times that you do it before you get here, and then it fails when you step on stage. But in essence, what you're doing is you're going into that command line, and you're feeding it the same setup routine, except you're pointing it to the restoration INI file. So this is something that I found it's useful for snapping back an environment, good for testing out the restore process, and an extremely useful way for just getting pre-planned restoration processes in place for your environment. So you picture when you're going through a restore, it's never really a happy time. It's not a calm time. But if you can have something like this made available ahead of time and potentially copied to a secure, safe environment, you can have this ready to go to start the restoration process. So unfortunately, finishing a little bit earlier than I had planned just because the restore won't be possible. But I want to finish and see if there's any room for questions or any questions that anybody has. Feel free to fire away. Sure. To back up, I'm sorry, say again. Correct, yes. The question was just as far as the additional features in Service Pack 1 of being able to do backup and restores from SQL Server. Yeah, Data Protection Manager is also supported in that process, too. So, yeah, absolutely. The landscape as far as backup and recovery of Config Manager has changed a lot since what we were used to for all of the previous iterations of the product. There's major changes there, and that being one of them, being able to hand off that process. Though there's a lot of organizations that are comfortable with this, it's what's been there for many years. Heather?
So with the DPM 2012, does it do like agent install on the SCCM side? It covers the SQL and the config side, backs up completely, and we can restore it from there? Or does it have to be run from the SCCM again, the backup, and you're picking up the file?
It's a good question on the DPM. I'm not a DPM guru. I haven't gone that route as far as a restore. I don't know if anybody else happens to have any insight on that, but it's a good question. That's one I'd have to look into a little bit more. Any other questions? All right, well, I appreciate your time. Hope you've enjoyed the presentation, and if you have any other questions, please feel free to stop by.